This is John Abrams, and this is The Variety Artist, episode 61. I had a great time interviewing our guest today. The thing that really shined through was that these two people love working together. They're a married couple that are best friends that have one of the greatest jobs in the world. I'm a little envious, but really happy they're around. Make sure to stick around to the end where Jeff and Tessa give tons of great tips and advice. Have fun.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
My guests today are maybe the best mentalist duo in the world. Fox Television says the most amazing mind-reading act you will ever see. NBC says the finest act of its kind in the world. Penn and Teller say this act is so good, just breathtaking. Never seen better. Variety Artists, I give you Jeff and Tessa, the Evisons.
Hi, John.
We knew you were going to say that, John. We knew it.
How did you know that?
It's amazing.
That's what we do. That's who we are. We want to say hello and greetings to you and everybody who's listening from Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, you're in Nashville right now.
Yeah.
What are you doing there?
We're this week working at House of Cards, which is a great venue for magic. It's our first time there. So tonight will be our third night, three shows tonight. By tomorrow, we'll be doing four shows a night, and it's been just a great experience. Yeah,
beautiful, beautiful place, too. If people haven't seen it yet, they should check it out.
I hear Nashville is hopping.
Oh, yeah. It's the place to be. It's like a, what do they call it, Nash Vegas?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We just heard that one. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
So many venues they're opening up. Even the owner of House of Cards is currently working on two other venues, not just for magic, but for live entertainment.
Yeah,
and everywhere you look, there's a live act of some kind, mostly music, of course.
Yeah, well, now for somebody who hasn't seen you guys act, what does your act look like?
We are a husband and wife, two-person mind-reading team. What does it look like? What does the audience see? It's very interactive. So for the most part of the show, it's what we call second sight. I would be working in the audience with various people, and Tessa remains on stage. She is blindfolded, and she knows things about people. Typically, this kind of act back way hundreds of years ago would have been items. People would hold up a pocket watch, a hair comb, something that they would have in their purses, pockets, wallets. And the mentalist, or the medium, as they were called, the on stage, would identify what those items were. But we've taken it to a whole new place where it isn't so much about the objects, it's about the history of the item. So most times, for example, somebody holds up an item that a comb, I won't even take it. I really want to get things that Tessa can delve deeply. We're looking for emotions. We're looking for deep reactions from people. They hold up a ring. Last night, for example, great, great grandmother gave her a ring, had 11 diamonds on it. And Tessa was able to describe the ring, had 11 diamonds, came from her great, great grandmother. And she even knew her great grandmother's name. And this for people is, it's beyond magic. They don't even know what it is they're seeing.
It sounds like by getting the history of the item, you're actually delving into the person's psyche.
Absolutely. What's really fascinating is, I think, because of watching videos, because remember, I'm blindfolded, over and over again, they'll look at me and they can't believe that I'm not looking at them. They think maybe there's electronics involved. They just can't figure out how this is happening, but it's impacting them deep in their spirit. I mean, after the show, I can't tell you how many times people come over and say, can I hug you? Because they can't believe what happened, but mostly because they feel uplifted, you know, because sometimes what they're holding up is from someone that's no longer physically in their lives.
Right.
And they feel like they've made a connection with them in a way they never anticipated. So even an amazing feeling for me being on stage and doing that for people.
And that's a good point. Every show last night, we did three shows last night. After every one, at least one or two people came up to you and hugged you. They just said, I just need to hug you. It's a very powerful moment for people. Yeah, it's cool.
So for a lot of people, you're bringing them back to maybe even people they haven't seen in years because they've been gone.
Or it could be someone in their life right now. They could be their child. It could be a graduation, someone they're in love with, anything at all. I mean, that's for us, people can hold up any object whatsoever. It doesn't matter what it is. We can do that.
Is there one particular routine or object that gets the biggest reaction?
Well, we definitely have a routine that gets the biggest reaction, but it's not part of what we just described to you, which is what we call second sight. And so we can talk about that after. This is a special piece in our show. We don't do it at corporate. Most of our work is either, I'd say, from the top to the bottom, corporate and then campus activities, and then some performing arts, fairs, cabarets, and theaters, and cruise ships. I should have put that up a little higher, too.
Yeah.
So at colleges and theaters, we do something in our show that is, it really impacts people. But for the second sight, I think the best items, the best objects are those that have a connection to another person that isn't even in the room with them at the time. And I stress that during the show because of the nature of our show. Tess is on stage. She's on the microphone. One of her gifts is that she can just keep talking. I don't think I've ever seen anybody that can just fill in. There's no dead spot. She'll just keep talking. If we're having a little trouble getting something that is suitable for the moments that we want to achieve on stage, I'll just keep asking people. And I want to get things that have a history, things that are gifts.
Yeah.
I think jewelry and photographs are two things that really impact people the most.
Yeah, but talking about filling in the space, John, I tell you, I can keep talking, but in my head, I'm thinking, what is taking him so long? You know, come on. But it's interesting. I challenge myself. Okay, what else am I going to say? Where am I going to next? So,
has anybody ever held up something embarrassing or something, you know, other than a piece of jewelry or something that's naturally there, held up something to be a smart aleck and been a kind of an embarrassing item?
Oh,
well,
yes.
Yeah, and you know, 2-3 years ago, you'd get a vape. And that would be taboo. But now everybody has a vape and they think they're pulling out an object that is very unusual. They're the only one. But it turns out I think everybody has a vape these days.
Well, nowadays.
So, yeah, yeah.
But I was thinking of someone held up a vial that had some liquid in it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And she wore it around her neck. And when I realized what it was in my head, I was thinking, oh, my God, do I have to actually say what it is? You know, I'm not a prude, but I just wasn't sure if it was okay to actually spell it out. So I kind of danced around it.
But last night, a woman
Wait, don't just go on from that.
I don't even like talking about this thing.
I know.
Go ahead, Tess.
I got the look. Anyway, it was a donation, maybe we could say, from a boyfriend, you know, so she kept that around her neck. What purpose, I don't know.
Got it. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But no, last night, and so that happened a few years ago. Last night, a woman had a ring that looked almost like a white stone. Opal?
Yeah,
looked like an opal. But what it was, when Tessa started describing it, it was her breast milk that she had somehow had encapsulated and I guess hardened and became part of the ring, and it felt solid.
Actually, her son is the one that got her his gift.
Well, how would they even keep that? I didn't even know.
I don't know. It was so dark. It's kind of dim there. Yeah. So I couldn't get a really good look at
Very
it after
weird.
The show. I wish I had more details on that. But in my mind, it was like, this is unbelievable. Yeah.
If it's something that I don't want to go, you know, if it's of a nature where it's a family audience, and we typically never go, there's nothing blue in our show. So there are things that I just say, no, we'll get to you later. And I never get back to them.
But we can always do it after the show for a demo because, you know, after the show, we you know, network with people, connect with people, and they come up either as a challenge or just to say, I really wanted to try this. And so we'll do it on the spot.
Okay. Well, just to go back to that ring, that must have been real strange because, Jeff, you're looking at it saying, oh, this looks like a ring. It's probably opal or something. And then Tessa, you have to know in your mind, wait, it's not opal. It's something else, right?
Oh, yeah. And when I'm about to say it, because it'll be something that I've never seen before, I'm not even sure exactly what it is. And so I'm just going to say what I'm thinking or dance around it a little bit. And so they'll see the connection no matter what I say. That's the goal.
This is, I guess, a question for Jeff, or I guess maybe both of you. Has Tessa ever gotten it wrong? You had to tap dance around for a little while?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. In mentalism, some people say it makes it stronger if there are mistakes. And some mentalists even rehearse little errors into the show. Maybe they'll overcome it at the end and it'll be the kicker. For us, because it's It's hard to rehearse everything we do. When we go into a rehearsal, let's say for a show, you know, it's like we get out there and then we're jazzing it from the moment we get out, because we never know. There's never two people or two items the same. Sometimes I might push the limits and really try to get something to Tessa, you know, that is a bit of a challenge for her. Normally we can overcome it, but it's okay if it isn't 100%. It kind of makes it a little more believable.
Not only mentalists do that, jugglers also do that.
Sure.
And magicians also do that. So that way at the end, there's the big kicker and you say, wow, that was amazing. He got it wrong before, but now he's getting it right. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it more human. And then it endears you to people because, you know, they see that you're working hard and you're trying hard and, you're not this perfection. After a while, that can get a little boring. You know, yeah, I can see what you do. Okay, but what about me? So that's the other aspect of that. You want to have that connection with the audience from that perspective too.
So, Jeff, does Tessa ever freak you out at a restaurant or something when you're about to order and she says, oh, I know he's having the steak?
No, but we freak out a lot of waitresses. I really love the impromptu moments when checking into a hotel or getting a rental car at the airport, waitresses. We did one on room service. The fellow came up and we were preparing for a show, ordered room service, and then he just started asking, what do you do? And then we'll always say, well, we'll show you something. And, you know, when they're not expecting it, the reactions are priceless.
Well, let me say, I wasn't expecting that either. It's actually on our social media. I think it was on YouTube. And I had one of the hotel robes on because we were getting ready for wherever we were going to next. Mm. And he just brought us in something to eat. And so I was in the bathroom waiting for him to leave. And Jeff says, hey, Tess, come on out. So I thought he'd gone. And I came out and he's still there. And we just went right into it. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And, of course, Jeff is recording because he records everything. So I'm like, okay, I think I look okay. It was fun. It was great.
Now tell us about the $100,000 reward.
You know, it's something that we make fun with it. Because I'll say if anybody ever proves that there's any electronics or the glasses have cameras, Tessa will write a check for $100,000.
It won't be a good check.
But she'll write the check.
She'll write the check.
But we have to do it, I think, because it's something that people assume in this day and age that we're using electronics.
Right.
And even if we, you know, have them come up and I open my jacket, they examine it, I hand them my eyeglasses. Some people, they demand, let me see your eyeglasses, let me see inside your coat. Yeah. That doesn't happen very often, but occasionally it does. There's just nothing we can do. They're convinced, okay, I can't see it, but I know it's there. Mm-hmm. What else? What other possibility is there? So I think we have to call attention to it. And though sometimes I'll forget to say it in a show because something will happen that we're just moving into a different direction. And without fail, people will come up after the show and say, I know it's electronics. I can't figure out where.
Yeah, that's why it's great for us to do demos after the show, because that's where, you know, now they're really close up also, so they can watch clearly and closely what's taking place from beginning to end. And the other aspect of this $100,000 offer is that so often, especially at campuses, they love to use that as a promo piece. So people do delve into our website and pick that up. And sometimes they don't word it right, I've got to say, but at least it's out there and it catches people's attention.
So often we'll get to a venue, typically campus, and mm-hmm. there'll be posters all over, or their social media posts. And it says, this is 100% real. If anybody proves otherwise, they'll give you $100,000. So, they've just misinterpreted what our offer is. And so we get people coming to the show and saying, I'm going to get your $100,000. I know it isn't real. But we kind of enjoy when they do that because, hey, we didn't say that ever. They want to promote it that way. That just brings more people out.
If it gets butts in seats.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
it takes.
So we're going to switch from your act to you guys personally. How did you guys meet?
We met in 1983. I had just moved back from living in the Caribbean in the island of St. Lucia. Mm-hmm. Plan was for me to go to university, but I had some delays because of my transition. So I started doing some work, and one of them was modeling.
Oh.
One of the fashion designers up and coming in Toronto said to me that she wanted to have a magician in the show, just to do one piece with one of the models. And I was working with her behind the scenes at that point. And I just said to her, I want to do it. And she was like, have you ever seen magic before? I had never. There I was, 21. I'd only seen one piece of magic, but till that, never. So I met up with Jeff and we did some rehearsal. And when I saw him, when he opened his apartment door for me to rehearse, for me, it was like love at first sight. Aww. And then we went on from there and we had an amazing rehearsal, a phenomenal show. And we just started working together. He asked me if I wanted to do other shows with him. And of course I said yes, for both reasons. It was exciting to do magic. And then I got to be with him more. And so it just took off from there.
I want to say that was 1983. Yeah. And we were in our, I guess, maybe 20, maybe not quite. I did a magic act at that time. So the mind reading, that sort of evolved later on. At the time, yeah, we did in that fashion show. Maybe some of your listeners are familiar with, of course, the zigzag illusion, the mutilated parasol, and the broom levitation. Yep. Yeah, those three things. And Tess just picked them up. She was great at it.
So how did you go from, that was my question, how did you go from magic act to mentalist act?
I went to visit a friend in my hometown who I went to high school with, and he let me listen to an audio recording of an act that did this similar to what we do now. It was a two-person mind reading act that he was working on, and we, Tess and I, just looked at each other and thought, this is so perfect for us. But he didn't want us to do it because it was his, so we didn't. We put it aside. Eventually, he gave up and he said, here, why don't you try it? So just a few years later, we on the ships, we had all kinds of time. Have you ever worked a cruise ship, John?
No.
Do one night a week, maybe two nights a week, and you've got all this downtime. So it was perfect because what we do, it's the practice, it's the rehearsal. You can't just open the box, open the book, and read it and go out and do it. It does require. So we took a few years of rehearsing, but the ships was the perfect platform. Eventually, we did it on stage one night. The seas were so rough, we couldn't do any illusions. The captain insisted that we, the magicians of the singer, Linda Caron out of New York City, still a very good friend of ours, her and us, they asked us to do a show together. Couldn't do any illusions. That night was supposed to be the broom levitation and fire eating. We did fire eating.
My favorite.
And we couldn't do it, so we thought, this is the night. We'll do the mind reading. And that was the buzz of the ship. Eventually, we would mix the two, magic and mind reading. And then a few years later, we just gave up on the illusions because all our bookings were for the two-person mind reading act.
Well, and not only that, but then you don't have to load in the big props, big broom suspension and zigzag and such.
Our mentor used to say he would encourage us to get out of the moving business. He said, all you're doing is moving.
But we can still pack things really great. We learned our lessons from that experience, but it's so nice to be much lighter.
Oh yeah, I'll see on Facebook a young magician coming up and he'll be saying, well, I really want to get into the illusion business. And I'm like, well, if you really want to.
Yeah, but choose carefully.
You guys were on Penn & Teller Fool Us. It's a great clip, by the way. If anybody listening to this gets a chance to watch your YouTube clip for the Penn & Teller Fool Us, it's fantastic. Tell us kind of the process of how that whole Penn & Teller thing works.
For us, we got a call from one of the producers to ask if we would do the show. I think it was the first year in the U.S. and we declined the offer. To be honest with you, we were afraid of working for Penn & Teller because of their stance against mentalists. They can have a pretty heavy opinion about mentalism and ethics and whatnot. And, you know, we're very ethical in what we do. It doesn't really apply to us, but we just thought, no, it's not something that we want to do. They called again the second year and we accepted it. Did we do season two? I can't remember what season we did. And then we had to cancel because Tessa had to have a surgery. And so the third season they called back.
But this time the call actually was from Johnny Thompson.
Yeah. Oh,
we were just like, we weren't expecting his call. And we were just thrilled, had a great conversation with him. And he said, we absolutely need to do this show. It'd be great for us. And we thought, okay, if Johnny's saying that, let's just give it a shot and go. What a day it was. There's so many twists and turns that were quite unexpected.
Yeah, we were pretty nervous on that show because we had been to Vegas a couple of months before then for a job. And we had a night off. We went to see Penn & Teller's show. And Penn said a few remarks about mentalism and how I hate mentalists. And what are we getting into? But by that point, we'd already signed the agreement. And then we went to the taping of the show. And everybody starts off downstairs. All the performers of that particular episode of Penn and Teller will be in the green room down below the stage underneath. And one by one, they bring acts upstairs, they do their spot, and they leave through a different exit. You never see somebody who's just done the show. They don't want anything being talked about between the acts. So when it was our turn, we were called up and they set us in the wings, and they were just wrapping up the last act. And all of a sudden, Penn and Teller came storming through the doors off to the side of the stage, slammed the doors and left. And they said, oh, okay, we've got a 30-minute break. Oh, and something had happened with the other act that I guess it turned out to be a fooler, that there was a little bit of a disagreement whether they really did fool Penn and Teller. Penn thought they didn't. The judges thought they did. So it was a fooler.
But we were at that perfect spot in our minds. You know, when you charge yourself up and you're ready to get on stage and it's like a 30-minute wait, we're like, oh, my God, how are we going to get back to this place in our minds and our hearts? So, but we didn't have a choice. And they brought them back out and they sat down. And then they called us on stage. And as we walked out, Teller leaned over to Penn and put his hand in front of his mouth and whispered and pointed at us. And we're thinking, oh, my God, what is he saying about us? So stop making us nervous.
Because they really don't know who's coming up next. Penn and Teller, they don't know until you come out on stage. It was great, though.
It was super.
We were so happy. One thing they didn't show is Teller, when Tessa gave the serial number on the bill at the very end, he ran out of his spot, his seat, went up, got down on one knee, bowed to Tessa, handed her the $100 bill, and walked away. And they cut that. They edited most of that out.
But it was a good moment. I was like, oh, my God. What a great promo piece. Thank you so much, Teller.
Oh, that would have been a great promo piece, but you don't have it, huh?
No. We have him giving her the $100. They kept that part in.
Yeah, I saw that.
We have witnesses. We have friends who actually from Toronto who came to to see the show. So we're like, oh, you saw it.
Oh, I'd like to have that. Oh, dang.
But it's all good. They said so many wonderful things about us. That was the other thing that we were just so grateful for. So, you know, to have it for a promo piece, they were very, very kind to us. So we're glad we made that decision. It was a good one.
It used to be Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was Jay Leno.
Right.
And now if you're on Penn and Teller Fool Us, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I think for Magic, Penn and Teller Fool Us and AGT or any of the Got Talent shows, those are the two big ones.
Yeah.
Ellen would be nice too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Ellen, if you're listening to this.
Yeah. I'm sure she does.
You know who to call.
Right.
All right, we're going to move on to fact or something John just made up. That sound like fun, you
guys?
Yeah.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Ah. I'm going to give you a headline, and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay.
First headline. The Evasons had a show canceled at the U.S. Air Force Academy because of concerns they might use their telepathic powers to interfere with security and classified information.
Yes, totally true. That was when we were first starting working in the U.S. We lived in Canada. We're both Canadian. Now we're dual citizens. But we had an agent out of Michigan, and they booked a lot of these Army bases. And we'd never done one. Big deal. You got your first base. And we were so looking forward to it. And about 2 weeks before we were to go, they said that they felt we were too much of a risk to bring on because of our abilities.
Now, had somebody seen your act? Somebody from the Air Force Academy?
I think they saw a videotape. It must have been. That's back when VHS was before the internet. But that's, I think, it had to be that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been a good piece on that.
So yeah,
we were like, but they were like, we're not allowed to discuss this. So they were very strict about it all.
I think that should go on your website. I think that's a great testimonial.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's too bad we didn't get a letter, an official letter.
Documenting. Yeah.
All right, we're going to go to the next one. Jeff and Tessa spent a rough night anchored in the Bahamas on their sailboat because of sharks.
That is so true.
Tell me about that.
Well, I think this is the one where our nephew was with us.
Yeah, we used to live on a sailboat for many years. Tessa and I lived on a 45-foot sailboat.
Yeah, we just loved it. And so we would take some time off during the winter and go across to the Bahamas and just chill for a few months. And so one night when we came in and we were anchoring, there's a way you need to pull your dinghy up. We were towing it behind us, and we forgot we were towing it behind us. And it, and the string, or the painter that it's called, got wrapped around the propeller. And of course, we shut the engine off. Jeff was like, okay, I'm going to go into the water and cut it off so we can have it for the morning. So he jumped in with his fins and his goggles and started cutting it off. And then all of a sudden, this shark came from nowhere. And he had to get right back into the boat. And so he was trying his best to do it, but it just kept coming back and forth. And then the night got really, really rough, and we could see them coming all around us, sailing all around us, swimming all around us. And we didn't have any idea that the place we were is where they had tours, and they would bring people in to dive and to feed the sharks. So they thought we were getting the water to feed them. It was a tough, tough night. We didn't have the anchor set properly. And we didn't sleep hardly a wink that night.
We could, I couldn't do it. We just gave up and said, okay, we'll try it tomorrow morning. Let's just spend the night. And the next morning, you don't want to get into the water too early because they're feeding. So about 10:30, 11 a.m., I'm back in the water, and that darn shark is there again. And so we just had to time this. My nephew had a whistle. He would blow it. I could hear that under the water. And we would wait until the shark was at the bow of the boat charging towards me. And Tessa was standing at the bow with a whistle. She'd blow her whistle. My nephew in the dinghy close to the water would blow his whistle. And then I'd jump back out of the water. And this we did this for a good hour until the line was free of the propeller.
We took that anchoring spot off our list of destinations to go to.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Any other mentalists listening to this, you know, there's this great place in the Bahamas that you can go to.
They're pretty much sharks everywhere. The Bahamas there's a lot of sharks everywhere you go. Yeah, a lot of times we're swimming, diving, fishing, and you look over and there's sharks. They're just there, but they're not out to get you for the most part.
Most of them.
If we do spear fishing is a big thing there for grouper. And if there's blood, that's what attracts them. So you want to get that out of the water as quickly as possible. We've done a ton of that.
And there's certain ones that are quite aggressive, the lemon and the bull shark. So if you see them, you just get out of the water. You don't wait to find out what kind of mood they're in.
You're like, hey, how's it going, Mr. Shark? You're aggressive. We'll go to the next one. Speaking of water in the Bahamas, on a cruise, Tessa accidentally forgot her performance dress and did the entire act in one of Jeff's suits.
I don't remember that happening.
I don't think that happened.
That never happened?
No.
No, you're making that up.
Yeah, I didn't make that
That's
one.
A good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. And, you know, the interesting thing about that is that that would never happen because no matter where we go, I usually have a second costume. Mm. I've never really had to go into the second costume except once we were doing this holiday show, Christmas show, and we would do, you know, everybody who's a performer, magician, you know, on those weekends, you're going from 2 to 3 to 4 shows in one day. And so we had our set really going fast. And this is when we were doing illusions, and it was for the zigzag illusion. And I was wearing this costume. I had it on, and I was setting up the zigzag and doing things, and Jeff was getting ready. And the client was very irritated. She was very stressed out, and she wasn't really nice to deal with. And then all of a sudden, I started noticing these little things on the floor, and I didn't know what it was. And I realized it looked like frosting or icing. And then I realized what it was. There was this huge cake on a table behind me that had a Santa Claus theme and Christmas theme on it. And so I turned and I looked at the cake, and what had happened when I was bending over, I had swiped the cake, the frosting, with my butt cheeks, and it actually had left a print of 2 butt cheeks in the cake. And I was like, oh my God, I have just ruined our careers totally. So Jeff came in seeing the impact. He's going, what's going on? I said, I showed him the drops. I showed him the cake. He goes, oh, you're going to have to tell the client this one. So he went and got her, and she came in the back of the room, and I stood in front of the cake, and I said, I'm really, really sorry, but I've done something really terrible, and I stepped aside. And she looked at it, and she just broke down laughing. She was almost crying. And she's like, oh my God, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. You know what? She says, that's exactly what I needed today. I've been so stressed out, and Christmas is supposed to be a fun time. She said, don't worry about it. We'll just cut it. And I said, you know, I know how to ice cakes. I can fix it up. She said, no, we won't bring it out as a display. We'll just cut it up. So, and she said, are you ready to start the show? I said, I just got to change my costume and I'll be ready for you. So that is the only time I had to do that.
And as she was serving up the cake, she was like, would you like a butt? Or...
Absolutely. And cake's my favorite thing. So I said, I can take some of those pieces if you don't mind.
Last one. While traveling overnight from Egypt to Israel, the UN tour bus the Evisons were on was forced off the road because they were under attack.
Yeah, true story.
That was so scary.
We thought,
what happened there?
We thought we were under attack. It turned out it was Bedouins throwing rocks at the bus.
Just little kids, yeah.
We had done a show, a UN tour, 1989, and we had left driving overnight through the desert, and the bus was full. It was a big tour. John Allen Cameron was a Canadian music star, and he had a full troupe, dancers and performers, and the drummer in the band was... After we left this, he was to star in Phantom of the Opera in Toronto.
He was the musical production director for this whole production that we were doing, and he actually became the musical director for Phantom of the Opera in Toronto.
So he was sitting in the bus against the window, and he happened to have his hand up against the side of his face talking to the girl he was sitting with, and that was the first window to smash. And the rocks hit his hand and broke a number of bones in his hand. He couldn't play the drums for months later. And then other windows started smashing, and the bus driver pulled over to the side of the road and said, everybody down, hit the deck. And so here we are, the whole bus, everybody piled on top of each other in the aisle. The girls are crying and the guys are yelling. And
wait, who's throwing the rocks?
Well, it was kids in the Bedouins in the desert.
They're like nomads in the desert. Yes.
But we really thought it felt like, and it sounded like gunshot, like bullets coming through. Then we started screaming at the driver, why are we pulled over? Get out of here. So eventually he started the bus and went, and then we pulled over miles away and discovered that these were rocks and stones that they had thrown at us. But I'll tell you, it was at that moment when that's happening, you really think this is the end.
And it's still dangerous, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, for the drummer especially, he's the only one that got injured, but there was blood everywhere. His hand was really torn apart badly.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
We're going to move on to some fan questions. You like some fan questions?
Yeah, sure.
Every time I interview a new guest, I put on my Facebook group that you can ask questions of our guests. And you guys had a bunch. We'll start with Peter Menny, a comedy conjurer out of Canada. I love that. Comedy conjurer. I like that.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
He asked, what is it like being together 24/7?
Well, you know, we know Peter. We go back a long ways. Peter's from London, Ontario. We started out in Toronto, Ontario. So we just did a show with Peter a couple of years ago. He was part of a crew. We were taping a possible TV show. I think that for us, we started out working together. We started off as best friends. We weren't in a relationship for... 2 or 3 years after?
5 years, okay. John. 5 years.
Wait, there you go.
Those sound like 5 long years, the way you said that.
It was.
So our working together, it just, we had a really good flow, and we would, even though we lived in two different places in the city of Toronto, but two different, we didn't live together, we would, every day, we had an office, we would get on the computer. We've always had that office thing going, the booking and then doing the shows together. It's just chemistry. I think it's for two people working together. For example, that drive I referred to, we worked in New York City and then drove down to Maryland to get on the plane to come here. So Monday night we were in New York. On the way there and the way back, I drive. Tessa can be on her laptop. We accomplish a lot more with two of us always working together in tandem.
We always have a lot of fun, and you know, sometimes even the drives, we feel they go by so fast. Even though we're a team, we individually are busy with different projects or clients, and even our personal lives, there always seems to be so much to catch up on.
Yeah.
So it's never boring, never a dull moment. We really don't argue once in a blue. But we're pretty much on the same plane most of the time. And I think the other aspect is because we sail together, we have this other aspect of our lives that when we're trying to have downtime together. It was just an awesome connection.
Oh, yeah.
24/7 for us is easy, and in many ways, it's a good thing. I mean, we are apart a little bit every day, but most of the days, but not too long.
Yeah, but I don't think we've spent in 35 years that we've maybe spent two nights apart.
Yep, yeah. That's true. Mm.
So we're always together.
And when you're driving now, you have great podcasts to listen to.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we've been catching up with some of yours recently. It's great.
Absolutely.
All right, so Conrad Colon, a terrific magician out of New Jersey, asks, we may have touched on these. How do they balance the insane travel schedule and maintaining the relationship? That's one. We kind of touched on that.
Yep.
I know they used to go sailing for a portion of the year. Do they still do something like that?
We sold our boat three years ago. It wasn't even for sale. Somebody just offered us, and it was an offer that you couldn't refuse. So we took it. We're actively searching for a new boat now. Yeah. Okay. But we have a I'll call it a cottage. It's a home up on an island in Canada that we go up to, and that's kind of our getaway. We use that now as in place of the boat, I suppose, yeah, in a way. So we've always found it important to have a place to go to there, or a frame of mind to get to that is out of the show, because as you can imagine, when you work together on stage and in the office and booking shows, you got to have a release at some point.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, what we noticed when we took some time off to go sailing, we took a few months off every year. We were always amazed at how many more bookings we would get for the rest of the year. It would, be as much as what we would have got for the whole year. Because people were always interested in hearing what we did. We came back, of course, now we hadn't worked for so long. So, as much as you practice, it's the performing that really makes your act go really well. And we just came up either with new angles or new pieces, partially because we couldn't exactly remember how we got from A to Z. You can write everything down, but there's minute details that you can never write down. It just happens when you're up there. We loved going away because we knew when we came back, it was going to refresh our act and our perspective and what we did for entertainment. It was really a wonderful experience.
Sure, and you're bringing back special memories that you have from those times, and you can bring those into your act and makes it deeper and more fulfilling for you and the audience.
Yeah, very true.
All right, so Conrad has another question. He says, if you weren't in entertainment, what would you be doing?
Wow. Yeah, I know that I would be running my own business. I don't think I could work for somebody else. So I don't know what it would be.
For me, I think my dream ever since when I was young was two things. And one of them was to be a doctor. But as I've gotten older, I'm not sure that I would do that. It's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of pressure. The other thing that I really always wanted to do, and I did have my own little business at 13, was cakes, baking cakes. I tell you, I love cakes. So, and I did competitions and icing. So that would be one of the two things. But definitely my own business, like Jeff said, there's something about working for people is good on one hand, but you have so much more control when you work for yourself. A lot more demand, but you can control what you do in the year with your time.
Tessa used to run a business too when she was, before I met her, she ran her own family, her father's business. And I tried to work with my dad. He was a plumber. My grandfather was a plumber. They had a pretty big company. I thought, well, maybe that's, but it just wasn't for me.
Yeah. My dad's company was silkscreen printing. So we made a lot of t-shirts and a lot of items for tourists that came to St. Lucia. It was a great learning experience. I mean, I was just 18 at the time and I was the manager. So I just loved it. I was very passionate about it.
So have you used that in promoting the things that you're doing now?
Oh, absolutely. I think we've taken from everything, all our life experiences from the time we were very young and our passion, of course, but we keep learning and growing and studying. And, social media is huge. That's a big transition.
That's crazy.
So that's been a pretty big leap, especially all of us at this stage of our lives. It's harder work than the youth. They're used to it. That's who they are.
I've talked about that many times. I've had a couple of people here on the podcast to try to catch us up on Twitter and Facebook and things.
Ugh. Yeah, I remember listening to one of Madeline Sklar's about Twitter and all her tips. And it was like, well, they were great tips. But when she said that, you should post 5 times a day, it was like, what? How do you have time to do all of that?
On one platform, just one.
It's crazy. Yeah. I use Buffer, which you can have one post for 5 or 6 different platforms. So that's helpful.
Yeah, that was a really great podcast. So I was so glad that you got her on. And I've got it on our calendar for when we have a little downtime starting next week. that we're going to go back and listen to it and try out some of the recommendations. Sounded really good. So thanks for having her on.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I listened to it. I've listened to it a bunch of times. And sometimes I listen to it and I sit on my Twitter, on my computer while I listen to it to try to, you know, make the adjustment, the adjustments that she says.
Cool.
All right, we'll go on to Rob Balchunas, famously known as Rob the Balloon Guy. He has that on his business card. He says, don't really do it. All right, so he says, I've seen many male/female mentalist duos. What do you do to set your act apart? Oh, in fact, he and magician Caleb Morgan had kind of similar questions. What tips do you have for creating a unique, one-of-a-kind act?
Mentalist duo is a term that we came up with, and that's what we call. That's our tagline for our act. Every time I say, and mentalist duo is our Instagram handle, and I hear other acts using that term, and I kind of wish they wouldn't, because that's the title of our act. But it's become kind of a generic term, maybe, to describe a two-person mind-reading act.
I thought it was generic, too. When I read it, I was like, well, that's what they do, and that's what they are.
Yeah, no, when we started, that was the title of our act, the mentalist duo.
And okay.
I never heard that term before.
Yeah, we were the only two-person mentalism act in Canada for many years. And there were just a couple of other mind-reading acts, Simon Aronson and Ginny, and Dan and Jan Orleans.
Yeah.
But Simon and Ginny weren't full-time. And Danny and Jan, they sort of did a kind of number of different things, not just the two-person act.
And Glenn and Francis Falkenstein in the U.S. But when we started, we really didn't know of anybody else. And then we kind of learned eventually about these three other acts. You know, now there's quite a number of two-person mentalist acts coming along. So I guess the question is probably better, what do they do to set themselves apart? If that's what he means, what do we, to set ourselves from other mentalist dudes? We're just doing our thing that we've always done.
Yeah.
It's about our personality. It's about our relationship together on stage. These are elements that we bring into the show. We're a married duo. So that brings a lot of different fun moments within in the show.
We're also mixed race. So visually, of course, we look quite different and we're set apart that way. And we're not afraid to play our mentalism as real and strong. And I think a lot of people always dance around that, but we don't, because we believe that we are performing a show and we should be exactly what people would want it to be during this show. I think that's one of the things that helps us a lot.
We were lucky to have mentors, and I don't know the cases of any of the other acts, but I do know that we seem to be the only duo that is capable of doing the first, the middle, the last names. You know, there's some acts that'll do only the objects, as I kind of referred to earlier, or they'll do maybe a name, a first name here and there. We can give a lot of information.
All right. So next question, Matt DeCero, another excellent magician out of Canada. He, by the way, he has a great Penn & Teller clip also. He asks, well, you touched on this a little bit. Are you inspired by other two-person acts in other fields like music or dance, etc.?
Well, let me say about Matt DeCero first. He's a very good friend of ours also from Toronto area. And when we did the taping of Penn & Teller, he was on with us.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I have to tip it. He was actually able to put in a special request so we could be taped, recorded at the same time. Of course, our show didn't air on the same episode, but that was so much fun. So we always help each other out and support each other.
This
question is that, I'd say for both as well, there's a lot of different couples. The comedy, Laurel and Hardy is one. Mm-hmm. And Magic, Siegfried and Roy, Marvin and Carol Roy. Music, Sonny and Cher, and Donnie and Marie. And Donnie and Marie, we have been trying to see their act in Vegas forever, but every time we get to Vegas, it's a dark night for them, and we just haven't been able to schedule it. And we really want to see them live because we hear that they're a phenomenal act. Like, you can learn a lot from them, from watching them. I know people will be surprised on that.
But in magic, I think Penn and Teller, amazing duo. What they have going between them is just beautiful to watch. My favorite duo team, I think, is Mark Kalin and Ginger. Big fans.
Yeah,
they're fantastic.
Smothers Brothers comes to mind, too. They were always so much fun. That was a great act.
We'll move on to Matt's second question. His second question is, show business is full of missed opportunities. Have you got one that stands out in your mind? If so, the lesson you learned from missing out.
Yeah, I think there, you always have, but it's life is about making decisions, and we made decisions early. For example, in our 30s, we took sailing a class in Toronto on a whim one summer. We thought, let's take sailing lessons. We graduated. We went. We ended up buying a boat. We thought, let's go sailing in the Bahamas. We were 32 years old, and here we are. We went over there for 2 months. You know, these are decisions, and because of the decisions we made, we lost other opportunities, mm-hmm. plenty of opportunities, some television things along the way. Maybe we should have agreed to some contracts that we turned down or some offers that we turned down. But I think for me, the number one would be another language.
Oh,
I think if we could, we started studying Spanish a number of years ago, and I think we just kind of gave up on it because of schedules. But that, I think there's so much opportunity around the world, especially with that language, that I wish we would have furthered that.
Yeah.
What do you think, Tess?
Yeah, I'm on board with you on that. I think I would touch base on agency being one of them. I know a lot of acts get calls to do it, and they had really pursued us, especially after seeing us on Penn and Teller.
They called the night that it aired. Somebody called right after we were on. Somebody called from AGT.
Mm-hmm. Again, it was one of those things that we couldn't make the decision to do it. And by then, they had already had the clairvoyance on, because we couldn't do it the year before either. And we just thought that we shouldn't really do the act so soon after theirs, because, of course, you know, they were similar to us. But to be very honest, as we go forward, when you prepare or try to prepare for a show like AGT, we came up with some pretty phenomenal ideas. And you never know, maybe we'll still do it. We still had the offer on the table for this year. Again, we just couldn't take it up. We have other projects that sometimes you can't back out of them once you have those contracts.
Sure.
So we'll see how we pursue it. Overall, we've been very happy with the choices we've made, and we don't live with regret.
And the big difference between Penn and Teller and AGT is Penn and Teller, it's one act, one routine. Whereas AGT, don't you have to have three? I think it's three, is it?
Yeah, I think, they want a lot of material going in. Also, Penn and Teller, you get to do a nice chunk of material. You know, for us, they just said, do whatever you want. But you do get a really nice showcase for your act on their show.
Yeah.
I think your clip is 9 minutes long.
Oh, is it really?
It's great. It's worth every second of it. But on AGT, I think it's a minute, is it? 90 seconds?
It can be about 90 seconds. Sometimes they'll give a little more. But we did have other routines. I mean, we have a longer show that we perform, so we don't just do the second set. We might use that ability in other aspects of what we do. But we had quite a chunk of material that we could have filled many more spots with. So,
got it.
You know, it's interesting just even thinking about it, because it makes you more creative, even if you just take it back to your own performance.
Mm. All right, Dale Kay, your friend, an amazing hypnotist, episode 54. It's a terrific episode of The Variety Artist. He says, hey, how do you feel about putting in decades of work into the Second Sight act, especially with other couples relying on electronics and gimmicks? If these devices and tech were available when you started 30 years ago, would you have used them?
What a great question.
That is a good question.
Yeah. Thanks, Dale.
Dale's one of our closest friends. And what a great podcast he did.
Oh,
fantastic.
Yeah,
really thanks.
Yeah, that was great. For us, and I think his question is specifically two-person Second Sight acts, right? He's not talking about electronics in general.
Yeah, that is what he's talking about, I think, because as a magician, over the last 5 years, we've had to fight that too. You have to actually put things in your act to disprove, just like you were talking about earlier, to disprove electronics.
Yeah, and mentalism, some of the electronics are beautiful. And in some instances, there's no other way to accomplish the effect. I've seen other acts that do use electronics today. They hold up an object. It's an iPhone. It's a comb. It's a that. You can't do the other. You can't really get a lot out of the items or the people. Would we have done it? Well, we did have the opportunity. We did consider it. So no, we would not have.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think that answers it enough. What are three wavy lines? Tell me about that. That's something new that you guys have come up with, or what?
We have some routines that are not only for two people. So definitely any mentalist could perform over the years. So in our long show, we do a 75-minute show for theaters and colleges. So we have a lot of other things other than the second site we're referring to. Pretty much everything in our show is original. We try so hard not to perform anything that anybody else is doing.
And if we do, then we certainly are going to put a good twist to it and make it our own version and claim it as ours in a way that no one else is doing it the way we are doing it.
And so we'll be releasing some of these effects. One thing in particular, I don't want to talk too much about it yet, that we will be releasing that for a limited release. So three wavy lines, the name comes from the ESP cards, the Zener cards, the circle, the plus, the star, the three wavy lines, the square.
Yep.
You're familiar with them. Yep. So yeah, threewavylines.com, number three, WAVYLINES.com. There's people can sign up now to get on the list, and eventually we will be releasing some of the items for sale.
Ooh, good tease. Cool. In fact, I've seen the YouTube video, and it's a bunch of college students with their cell phones taking pictures of a picture you're holding up. It's very enticing.
It is the strongest thing we do in our show. We've been doing it for years. It's spirit photography, and it is something that we came up with, and we'll be releasing that eventually.
Yeah, we're known around the world for this, so it's one of our, one of the things we do, our pieces that we're very proud of.
I'm excited about that, and you're releasing it to the public?
Or to performers. Yeah.
No, not to every. You're just gonna go, hey guys, everybody, this is what's going on.
Yeah. No, it's the work that has gone into that for 20 some years. We've been doing it. It's the work that we've put into it. That's what we'll be sharing a lot of background on that.
Oh man, I'm excited about that. Now, do you guys have some advice for the beginner? We have a couple of different types of people that listen to this. We have beginners and pros. Do you have some advice for the beginner?
Yeah. I think one of the most important things for beginners is to consider their business skills. I mean, probably they don't have a lot. It depends on if they've done anything before. But one of the most important part of being an entertainer is knowing how the business works and how you're going to earn your keep and how you're going to save that money. Often I think entertainers think, well, they're going to have an agent or a manager, so they don't even have to think about it. But you need to know it inside out, sometimes even more than the magic, sometimes the mentalism or the singing, the dancing. You're passionate about that, so you're probably going to get that down pretty easy. The business side for a lot of people is a boring, tedious thing to do. But without that knowledge, you may not succeed. And business also is about promoting yourself. So it's the whole package is very important.
And find something that isn't being overdone in your act. Maybe it's the basis of your act. I've always loved pickpocketing, and it's not something that we see a lot when we work corporate events, maybe with other acts, which doesn't happen as much anymore. I don't remember ever working with a pickpocket act.
Oh.
Be unique, be something that's different, that you're the only one, that if they want to book that kind of entertainment, it has to be you.
They book you specifically.
You're the one.
Can we give a few more suggestions?
Oh, please.
Okay. Well, I was talking about promotion, and one of the things I think that people up and coming need to be careful of is to not oversell themselves. Because if you put that bar really high and you don't have an act to live up to that, you'll disappoint your clients. And the word does get out if you're in a small area or amongst agents. So keep improving on your promotion based on all your accomplishments. If you get an awards or TV, then you keep adding to that. Yes, of course, if somebody says you're the best in the world, great. But you have to ask yourself, are you really what you want to be sure that you're selling yourself appropriately and what you do on stage meets what your promotion says?
Right. There's an old expression that says undersell, over deliver.
Right. Yeah, that's it.
Absolutely.
Got it. Yeah. I think work as often as possible. There's nothing like doing the time on stage and set your price. Don't undersell yourself. I think a lot of entertainers, they have a hard time selling themselves for what they're really worth. And especially if you look at some of the other things, dinner might be $100 dinner that they're having, or a $50 dinner, and the venue might be thousands of dollars, and then the act is $500.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. And working for free, we all get asked this as performers, there'll be good exposure. And that's something we're always careful about. If it's a Cub Scouts or a church or something where there truly is no money to be made and nobody's getting paid, that's different. Yeah, we will work for free at some of those things. But if it's an association that is a nonprofit and yet all the organizers are getting paid and the hotel is getting paid and the caterers are getting paid, then of course we should be paid.
That's right.
And I think that they seem to think that entertainers will work for free. I don't know where that started, but
yeah, it's very true. But I think you can even take advantage of that when they say exposure, that you can control what the exposure is. So you are very involved in how they're placing your any advertising about you and how people can book you afterwards. Maybe you can include something that people would take home with them to keep, or that you'll give them a discount on your show going forward based on what you've done for them. Or you can do, if you're, you know, if it's a fundraiser, you may offer your services. So you may offer, if you're a magician, a magic class, so that'll be one of the auction items. Or if you're a mentalist, if you do any psychic readings, you'll offer whatever 15-minute reading to have that auction off. So there's different ways you can do it and still make some money and give them a discount and give them value.
We just did a fundraiser show in Texas where they paid our full fee, but we offered them to auction off a reading with Tessa after the show. A fun reading, a 10-15 minute session after the show.
Yeah.
And one person paid $1,000 to ask Tessa a question after the show. So they made a good, a nice little chunk of money off of that.
Yeah.
That means the world to them. It really looks like we've gone the extra mile. And really, it was 10 minutes of Tessa talking to somebody.
Yeah, it didn't cost you anything. Yeah. That's great advice. Now, do you have some? Oh, go ahead. Do you have more?
I would just say what we're seeing more and more the older we get is, we've always respected professionals and looked for mentors. It was important to us because we chose an area of magic that was very uncommon. The stuff in the books just seemed unrealistic at the time. So we found a couple that was willing to work with us and teach us for years. They became such good friends of ours. A mentor is so good. Don't take from people. Don't steal from some of the people. That that's something that we all deal with as professional entertainers with some of the up-and-comers. And it's okay to be inspired by people, but to just take, that's wrong.
And it can be hard to avoid doing that, because I think when you first start off, you're not really sure how to do an effect. And if you see someone else doing it, you might think that's the way you're supposed to do it, or that looks like a good way for you. And that's not always the case. And so often that's why books are better, because when you read the effect, you're not visually seeing how it's done, and it makes your mind be more creative. Now, of course, the way the world these days, everybody's looking at YouTube. That's how you're learning to do your magic, your mentalism. So I'm not dissing that whatsoever, but still somehow once you see it, you have to come back to yourself and ask yourself, how can I do this differently, and find a way, work hard at it, and you will get away for sure.
We've had some duos call us and email us, and we've helped mentor a couple of other two-person mind reading acts, and I love to see how they progress, and we've remained friends. There's quite a few. We have friends around the world that do this kind of act, and you know, when you work together, when you can collaborate, it's great for both sides. Some of the new people coming into it, they have great ideas that we wouldn't have thought of. Mm-hmm. Not that we're going to use it all the time, but it's fun to have that respect, that mutual respect.
Yeah, I never thought about Tessa's point about the difference between reading a book and watching a video. Whereas if you're watching a video, you're picturing that person doing that particular effect. Whereas when you're reading your book, you're almost more picturing yourself doing that effect, which makes it more original.
Yes, absolutely. I think so.
Huh. Interesting. All right, how about the working pro? Advice for the working pro?
Use a writer. So many times professionals get to the gig and find that they don't have the technical needs that have been provided for them. So if it's a writer, I think you're doing yourself a favor, but you're also doing your client a huge favor. Mm-hmm. Takes away the stress the day of the show. It's one of the things that we've worked with since day one, partially because for us, sound is the most important. 30 years ago, you walk into a hotel ballroom that had speakers in the ceiling, and they were, you know, radio realistic brand quality speakers like you find at an elevator, and two people hook into a microphone that's got an input on the wall. Remember those? XLR, the wall of the, and then the mixer is in another closet somewhere else, and nobody has the key. And so we soon realized that we have our needs, and we worked locally. We used to provide our own sound, but now we don't. And lighting is important because our show takes place in the stage and in the audience. Mm-hmm. Access to the audience. Can't tell you the number of times we would get to a venue and maybe it's a fair and you've got a racetrack between the stage and the bleachers where the audience is, and then there's railings. I can't even get out there. So that changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've always had a rider, and feel free, you know, our riders on our website, use it as a model for your own rider. Not everything's going to be suitable for every other act, but it's out there. Huh. Evison.com, we have a page for downloads that people can use. That's another good tip. You give people everything they need on your website, because we get emails. We need a promotional picture. We need a poster, or we need an introduction, or we need a marketing blurb. And that's all on our website. They can just go there and download it, including that rider, which the rider is part of our contract. So I think that everybody should have a rider, no matter how basic your act is. You need a stage, you need a microphone, maybe you're going to use music. Let them know everything you need before, so that they can speak to the people and get everything provided to you beforehand.
And I think it's great to have that paper trail, but you do have to keep in mind that depending on the event, that rider may be passed down hands. So you're not always sure who's going to get it in their hands and how well they're going to use it. So I always encourage the end client or the end person to use it as a check sheet, cross off as you are sure you have everything there. Mm. Also, if we know that there are certain things on the rider that are really important, that if we don't get that in a certain way, that it's really going to affect our show, we focus on that and make sure that we have that. We may even talk to the sound and lighting person aside from just dealing with the client, because the client usually doesn't really have any knowledge. They just pass the paper on to somebody else and they said, yep, they've got it. And then that's it. Well, they may not have got it. Yeah. So that's another thing, is it just take a few minutes. It only takes, always tell the client, 5 minutes. I just need 5 minutes of your time. If I can reach that sound person. And they're always happy to know that you're going to deal with them, because then they know it's going to make it even better for them.
Oh yeah. And there's no emergencies during the show.
Sometimes they come, you get surprises, but what you're trying to do is eliminate the surprises as much as possible.
I carry my own microphones. If we get a mic and they have a really cheap mic on stage that doesn't have a switch, let's say, we like to have a switched mic. I carry my own wireless mic, carry an audio ape device, which you're probably familiar with, John.
Yep.
It's great so we don't have to rely on anybody missing music cues. We do use music throughout our show. Walk on, we have some beds, we have some stingers, we have the walk off. So I can control all that stuff.
One other thought is going on a different directions about promotional materials is to update your material. And that's our opinion, to update your materials often, not just with the new shows, awards, or TV that you've done, but also your photographs. Some people keep that same photograph for 10, 15, 20 years. We try to do new photos like every 3 years. Mm-hmm. That's usually our target goal. We can't always hit that mark, but we do. And also if we get new ideas, we think that better represents how we're selling ourselves, we're going to go in and do some photos, even though we might have just done some a year and a half ago. Sure. So that's one thing to keep in mind. There's nothing worse for you to arrive to your show and your photograph is 15 years older or 20 years older.
Oh, yeah. I can remember a ventriloquist in Toronto. I'm not going to say any names, but yeah, the promotional material, the photo had to be 30 or 40 years old. So he looked nothing like the photograph when he arrived at the venue. It was great.
I see that in Southern California a lot too.
Is that right? Oh, it's awesome.
Oh yeah. You see the promotion of this guy or that girl, and I know them personally. I'm like, well, they don't look like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And now look how easy it is to take photos. Even on your iPhone, it's incredible. Some of the we have a great photographer that we've used forever, but you don't even have to go that way these days, do you?
Yeah, you don't have to, but it is nice to have a professional photographer. They can do things that I can't do.
That's for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think one more observation I just thought of. For two-person acts, and really this is something maybe for the beginner, but I've also seen professionals that have an assistant, a magic act, and she's bringing things on and off the stage and never gets recognition. Not even her name, or how about a big hand for whoever. It's a person. People want to know. If if you're a guy and you've got a woman coming off and bringing things on and off and helping you in the show, they need to connect with the audience. The audience wants to know a little bit more about that person. So at least tell us who they are, what their name is, and a little bit more.
Yeah, that's great advice. And it makes the show look bigger too.
It sure does.
Absolutely. Yeah. It sure does. If I can bump back to the promotional materials, another thought when you're doing the photo session, I'm assuming a number of people do this, but maybe a beginner wouldn't think to do this. is before you go to do that photo session with a professional photographer, is to make a set list of what you're going to do. What are the photos going to look like? And now that we all have our smartphones, you may even take a picture of yourself, of the idea of what it is you're trying to accomplish, and practice those poses. Look at yourself in the mirror. Does it actually look good in the way that you're hoping it to look? And then you make a set list of the costumes you're wearing, if you're wearing jewelry, ladies, you know, everything, or package it together. So when you get there to do your photos, everything's together. You got to change your costume, you got the shoes, you got the jewelry, you got everything organized. You don't even have to think about it. And if you have usually the makeup artist that stays there, often they'll help you get dressed or do things for you. So that makes it easier for them to assist you also. And the photographers just love it. And then you can spend more time taking more pictures, because they may have an idea that you haven't thought of, and it gives you that extra time because you're paying for a certain amount of time. Right. So you got to make every minute count.
Great advice, you two. I'm going to ask for one recommended book, one or two, whatever you have, and let you guys go.
Yeah, well, I think we both agree that one of the books that helped us and continues to help so many people is
Harry Lorraine and Jerry Lucas's The Memory Book. Mm. And everybody will know Harry Lorraine, I think a lot of people, because yeah. Of course he's also known for his card magic. And people are not always aware of his memory system that he created. And The Memory Book is the first one. It's a little pocket book you could fit in your pocket and your purse. It's amazing. It's intense. And it's may feel like it's a lot of work, but it will help you dramatically. And one of the things that a lot of entertainers, one of the aspects I have trouble with, is remembering their volunteers' names when they come on stage. I'll give you just a quick tip, and which I'm sure so many of you use, is AIR, attention, interest, repetition. So whenever you're trying to remember something on the spot like that, you get the person's name up, you make sure you say it a number of times really quickly. And you can also associate it with somebody else's that you know that has a similar name. Now, it may be hard for people to do that if they don't know the effect they're doing and their lines inside out, because they need to focus on those things. So that's often why people forget names. But it's even bigger than that. It will help you with so many other aspects. And Harry Lorraine has many other books, and he has memory kits and CDs. It's worth its weight in gold. He gives you so many tips of even being at parties and meeting so many people all at once. He tells you and shows you how to remember all of those names. And it's phenomenal. You'll impress your client.
And to remember your scripting for your act, it'll help. Our nephew came to live with us when he was going to high school. We'd already read The Memory Book, and we've always applied the stuff that we've learned even to this day. And with him, he had trouble in high school, geography and science. And so we taught him the basic memory techniques, mnemonics. Mm-hmm. And his grades literally went from barely passing in the low 50s up into the mid 80s, like that, like almost within one day, because he had an exam the next day that he was having a hard time remembering. I think it was the provinces of Canada and the states of the USA. Mm-hmm. And he just couldn't remember it. And in 1 4-hour drive that he was with us, driving from a show, Montreal back to Toronto, we taught him in our van. And the next day he aced the exam. Oh. And it just made him feel so good for so many people in life. That's great. That's a great book.
Well, thanks, Jeff and Tessa, for doing my my show. It was great. You guys are awesome. Way full of information and everything. I loved it.
Oh, cool, John. Well, this is a lot of fun. We haven't done a lot of podcasts, but you are definitely our most recent.
Yes.
I'm the best one you've done today.
No, this is awesome. This is fun.
Oh, you're great. We love listening to your podcast. I really particularly appreciate your energy and your enthusiasm. I just I can't lose any attention when I'm listening to you. So I really love how you do it.
Well, I have fun doing it. How could I not?
Yeah, we have a good life, don't we all? We entertainers. It's really fabulous, fun life.
Yeah, what a deal. We get to entertain and make people laugh and have fun and get paid for it.
Yeah.
What a deal. I'll let you guys go at that. And thanks to all my Variety artists. If you found this podcast valuable, which I know you did, tell a friend to listen. Say, listen to this podcast. That's how we can spread the word. And you reach me at john@thevarietyartist.com. Oh, before I let you guys go, is there some sort of social media you guys want to promote?
Yeah, on everything, we're The Evasons, TheEvasons, except for Instagram, Mentalist Duo on Instagram. Our favorite posts are the videos, just the impromptu moments as we're in our travels and Tessa's doing some of her mind reading with people unexpected.
But we'll also be promoting your podcast, John, because it definitely needs to get out there as much as possible.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And if you're hearing this for the first time, you can join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our guests, like my new friends, Tessa and Jeff. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.